Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahabiryan Karabhavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mabhidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 21, Sutra 215. Purva Paksha, so this is their doubt. In the Chandogya Upanishad is the following passage. Fire thought, let me become many, and the waters thought, let us become many. And in the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad is this passage. The breasts quarreled over who was the best amongst themselves. They went to the demigod Brahma and asked, who is the best among us? These impossible statements are as plausible as saying the barren woman's son is very splendid. For this reason, the Vedas are not a genuine source of knowledge, because in this way, one portion of the Vedas is found to be not authoritative. Other portions of the Vedas are also not authoritative. And therefore, the Vedas claim that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original creator of the material world is not true. Right? So they're taking it that they find some fault in one area that doesn't match their logic, and then they're applying it in other areas, which they also can't understand, because you can only understand the Supreme Lord if he reveals himself. Because if he doesn't reveal himself, you can't understand. So they can't understand this part, so therefore then they using this as the example, then they try to say that that's wrong, right? Because the whole idea is Pradhan is the source of everything. And so then if we're saying that the Supreme Lord is the source of everything, then you want to discount that. And you discount that by that the Veda is not authoritative. It says the Supreme Lord is the cause, but then in these verses here, it's saying, you know, fire is thing, let me become many, and all these things that they can't understand what they mean. So they're saying these are wrong, so that means other things could be wrong, so therefore then the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not the main, is not true. Yes.
Can you explain this aphorism?
Means he's thinking about fire thought and water thought and all that. That was what is explained before also in the Chandogya Upanishad, is that it's talking about someone came to Indra and said, you please teach me about the absolute truth, and he said you must worship Indra. Right? So then that's explained is that Indra means Krishna. He's just the post holder, but actually the potency of Indra is coming from Krishna, so you have to worship Krishna. So you have to worship the Supreme. So in all these, then fire thought means, because Krishna is everything, so in that form, then he is one of the major aspects within this world is fire. It means all activities happen because of fire. Right? So, therefore, then action being there, then he is fire, so then he is thinking in that mood, let me become many, let me expand so that all this creation can go on. Same way is that water. Without water, then nothing lives. Without water, there's no taste. Without water, there's no interaction. There's no rasa. Right? So then, therefore, let him expand in that way. And then the air, then is the same thing, because he's the life force of everything. So then he expands. So which of these life forces, then they're just amongst themselves having some fun. Just like we see when Krishna talks with the devotees, they say you're the supreme this and that. No, but I do this and that. Why do you say I'm the supreme? You know, so it's just that kind of fun.
Right. This is a pastime that comes in the context that even a blade of grass doesn't move without the sanction of Supreme Lord. So all of them then go to Brahma and then they decide. Then one blade of grass is put and then the fire tries to burn it away. It doesn't burn and the wind turns to wither, it awaits and wither. So then Paramatma is the original source. That
source
is
of it. Yeah. So you're trying to establish that the super soul, or you know, Supreme Lord, is the origin of everything. So they're thinking that they are the demigod may be thinking that they are the power, but they're not. You know, it's Krishna who's the power. They just happen to be the one that's there. Like you have a minister, the only reason that they can do their ministerial duties is because of the authority of the government. On their own, they're just some guy. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's being... So they can't understand these things. The point between the subtle, the metaphysical, the spiritual. So it doesn't... They're unable to appreciate all this. So because they can't appreciate it, they'll say it's wrong. It's like, you know, modern scholars. They'll say that, you know, whether they're, you know, studying Vedas or not, because they don't understand it, they therefore say that these things aren't there. So even if they accept the Vedas, they won't accept necessarily the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They, like these persons, will come up with that. And if they're not studying or they're not practicing the Veda, then naturally nothing makes sense to them. You know, because they can't understand, especially the Vedic Sanskrit. Right, classical is a little more straightforward, but the Vedic Sanskrit, then the tendency is to use obscure words. You know, it's just like in poetry, if you can use a very unique word, it always makes it better. So that's how the Vedic Sanskrit's written. It's always using a word in a very unique way. So,
it's a kind of technique that what you don't understand, you get rid of it?
Basically. If it doesn't make sense to you, then it has no value to you. And so, you don't want to look dumb, so you just get rid of it. Like that. You know, because that's an important thing. Because for the materialist, their false ego is very important. Without a position, they can't function. And so, whatever position they define themselves as, like, let's say you're scholarly. So, I'm a scholar. So, because I'm a scholar, I'm more intelligent than the average person. And in one way, you could say they are, as far as being able to sit and look at books all day, that they can do. But when it comes to practical knowledge and that, they may be absolutely useless, like that story of the boatman and the scholar. You know, when the boat starts to sink, the scholar's been telling him, do you know this subject, do you know that, oh, this much of your life is wasted, that much. And then at the end, when the boat is sinking, then a boatman asks, do you know how to swim? And he says, no. He says, 100% of your life is wasted. You know, so that's the whole point, is that it's false ego. People have to have an identity to function. The problem is because it's false, because they don't see it in relationship to the Lord, and don't see it in that in for the benefit of the Lord. So it's false. You know, it's not that they don't have the conditioned nature, let's say, of, in this case, of a scholar. So they have the intelligence, the mind, they have the body, everything that matches. It means they can sit down in one place and study books all day. Now, let's say someone, let's say, is a wrestler by conditioning. Can they sit down? No, they can't. But can the scholar then sit there and do, you know, whatever, you know, 1,500 squats and 1,500 push-ups and like that? No. I was heard of one wrestler, he used to do 5,000. You know, one of the big, I don't know where he was from, maybe 70s or 80s. He was a very famous, or farther back, very famous wrestler. He could do 5,000 of them. You know, so that the scholar can't do. You know, you probably have a problem doing one. You know? So then that's the thing, is that the conditioning matches, so that's what you have to work with, but it's not actually an identity. The identity is I'm servant. But this is what I'm working with. Like, this is a rock, okay? I put this here to hold down the paper. This is a flower. You use that for making nice fragrance. You don't use the flower to hold down the paper and the rocks to make garlands and make the room fragrant. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of knowing what you're working with. So that's intelligence. You don't have to identify with it to work, because most of the things we work with, we don't identify with, but we have an identity by which we work with them. So all we're doing is extending it further, that the body also is not an identity, it's also just another tool, and we are a servant. Does that make sense? So we'll take everything else, and it's just, even people will take as just paraphernalia to get our work done. Right? So why not be able to take the body and mind as paraphernalia to get the work done, which is serving Krishna? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So can we say, basically, neophyte, he's made of conflicts, internal and external.
Yeah. Sounds like you could write a song about that.
We've seen practically to the point of leaving the movement, because that conflict is apparently, for other devotees, it's not a conflict at all, but for some...
But you'll see, as those who leave the movement because of conflict, wherever they go, they make conflict.
Yeah,
they require conflict.
Yeah.
It's just part of their psyche.
Yeah. So then Madhyama, he can reconcile, you know, everything.
Yes.
But
yes.
Then for Uttama, it's a complete harmony. It's different,
yes,
level.
Yes, yes.
So here we see they find something, then the whole package goes down.
Yeah, but so it's the conditioning is the problem. So the more you, so in other words, someone who has more of conflict means they identify more with those.
Right.
You know, it's just like if I tell you that there's a civil war going on in Rwanda, does it matter to you? Not at all. It's like, where's Rwanda? Really? They're having a civil war? Another one? Oh, okay. You know, I'm saying, it just doesn't matter. So, in the same, but the thing is if you're there and you identify with the place, then it's a very important thing. So that's the whole point, is that they're identifying more with the material energy, therefore these things. Is, what's going wrong? What could go wrong? Right? Means if you're saying, oh, there's a problem in Krishna consciousness, what can do a wrong? Right? You find that devotees aren't that nice, or you find that authority isn't up to the standard that you want them to be, or you find, like these scholars, that things don't make sense on the philosophical or religious platform, you know, or generally we look at it as social or economic, you know, or it's just we can't control the senses, and you need to control the senses, they don't want to control the senses, so therefore it's easier to just go out. Did we miss anything? No, that's pretty much it. So then, basically, it just means you're attached either. Basically, it means you don't have faith in authority. Otherwise, you have faith in the principle of authority. Then someone cannot, an individual cannot be an authority, or a group representing cannot be in a proper authoritative position. But it doesn't affect the principle of authority. Therefore, then Prabhupada's authority, the acharyas, you know, the books, Krishna, all that stays in place. And then, you know, there's individuals that they themselves may not properly represent, but that's because of their conditioning. They aren't the movement. They're part of the movement. They're being able to take part. So if they don't do right, it doesn't affect the movement. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, but because they identify, because they have authority issues, therefore, if they find any fault in any authority anywhere, all the whole line goes out. That's why it's very dangerous to grow up where one doesn't have faith in authority. Because then it's difficult to trust any authority. And then if it's there for a long time, people do for a long time, it works nicely for a long time, you may develop that. And then you can function. But if at any point it doesn't, then, you know, so Amaya knows all she has to do is poke there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But this is a very important principle, and we discuss it very often. So we've noticed that some devotees, very intellectual, in principle, they do accept authority, but not anybody in particular.
But if it's they don't accept anybody, then that means they accept the theoretical concept, but it's not actually a realization for them, the importance of authority.
So it can happen, actually.
Yeah. It means just that you have any of those. It means, in other words, you don't accept authority, or you accept it theoretically but don't understand the real purpose, or you accept it as, you know, as a value. So it's a matter you don't accept, you have, you know, gyan on it, or you have vigyan.
Right.
So if you have vigyan, then it works. Mm-hmm. You know, then you know that this works, authority works. So if someone's not a proper authority, either they have to be, if they have potential, they just don't know what to do with it, then you adjust them until they do, or train them, or whatever it is. Or you find a different person who can be the authority. Right? So that's the difference. Like, let's say, okay, we have the idea of authority, but let's say, like that example, the temple president, people had a problem with him. For some reason, they removed the temple president, and they feel we've done a good job. You know, because, you know, authorities, you know, should be like this. This is the ideal. But they forgot about replacing him with a new temple president. It was only afterwards that someone brought it up. Hey, there's no temple president now. Oh, yeah. Then they had to, you know, so there's only kind of a theory there. You know, or it's just a matter of, you know, better no authority than bad authority, and, you know, like that kind of a thing. But the problem is, but then are they authority? What is their position for being in there? What is their qualification? You know what I'm saying? So it becomes very, very messy the less there's acceptance of authority. But if there's acceptance of authority, then it's a matter of here's the standard. And then are they living up to it? Are we living up to it? You know, like this. And then you can see is how to adjust and how to make it work, because you have to have. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. And then what was the next one? We had authority issues. We had sensual issues. Oh, and then just the social environment. Everybody's supposed to be nice and wonderful because religion means it's pious. So pious means I get all material benefits. So I'm not getting the material benefit. Everyone's not wonderful. Everyone doesn't love me. I don't feel loved and part of the whole thing because I'm, you know, I see myself as the center. So they make their own standards of what is social interaction. So check. They themselves may be quite nicely behaved, but is it actually really deep? Because someone who they have the realization and niceness, they're nice even if other people aren't nice. Like that. They'll just shy away from those people like that. But they'll still go on being nice. But if you have the thing is, oh, it's an ideal that you should be nice. They're trying to be nice, but they can't always do it. But if anybody else is trying to be nice and is not nice, then that's a great fault. You know, so then you get on the thing of that, you know, it comes back to yourself, like the first one. You know, it's about themselves. They expect their own mind as an authority. They accept their own behavior as correct. And so others don't live up to their material standard, which is not necessarily by Veda. Though now and again, I have seen those who go by the Veda, and that I've met two who... they've seen somebody behaving badly and they're quoting Shastra. And in that way, they're correct, but they don't understand the principle of bhakti and how reformation. So they have a real attachment to reformation, you know, according to the Veda. You know, you're not, you know, so anybody who's fought, then that's perfect. But if anybody's wrong, then that's totally wrong. So you get that kind of thing. But that's rare. Like I said, I've only met two people that is their lifestyle. You hear people quoting the Shastra, but actually they'll also quote, you know, CNN. You know, so it's like they couldn't, it's just whatever follows what they take as authority. But here's those who, they make their life that way and that, you know, so I've seen like that. They live like that. They live according to the rules. It means if something's wrong, they've done something wrong and people point it out, they'll say, yes, it's wrong according to Scripture. You know, they're very straightforward, very open like that. It's very rare to see. You know, so then, again, the problem is their own authority, their own idea, their own sentiment for that having this wonderful non-theistic just social experience, because it's not about Krishna; it's about they just want this nice, loving experience. So again, it comes down to if that was going on at home, why would they expect it from the society? Like if at home everything's going nice, what does it matter if nobody else likes you? So again, the first one at home, there's the authority issues at home, there's no this. And then sensual is just you think that the senses will actually make you happy. You know, the senses, money, power, you know, any of these kind of things. You think these will make you happy, and if you don't get them, you've turned to religion to get these things, you know, artarti, you know, or the first one, arta, or the other one, jigyasu. Like any of these that you've come to the movement for that, which is an okay place to start, but if you maintain that attachment, then as time goes, then one will be, disappointed. because, you know, our standards for everyone else is always so high. You know, it's just like, you know, thunderbolt and rose, you know, we're strict like a thunderbolt with everybody else and soft like a rose with ourselves. You know? Like that. So, you know, yeah. Does that make sense? So we can see is that it's just anartas. It's just an attachment to you know, a very pleasant atmosphere with no anxieties, or a atmosphere that has facilities and position, or, you know, whatever it is, sense gratification, whatever is the form of artarthi that they're looking for, or knowledge and all that. And so this comes, you know, people leave because of the, you know, the jiva issue or other things like this, or because they can't see things as they are. You know, whatever, said, you know, the moon, didn't go to the moon, you know. And so these kind of things is that it doesn't make sense to them, therefore they go against it, rather than you're supposed to bring your life in line with that. So the only safe neophyte position is that of the jnani, where they want to know about God. But it's still about knowledge. It's not so much of him as a person and the interrelationship and all that. That will come with time. But still, it's focused on Krishna. It's more about Krishna. The other things are, by coming to Krishna consciousness, I can get these things. So when they get them, they may go away. Or in the process, which is generally the case, is that by association, then they may have come for these things, but then they find that there's something more. And then they continue in devotional service. Like that.
Yeah.
So in these three, then there's that aspect of sakam. Right? But then you come to Madhyama. It means you can have Nishkam, and a neophyte just means they don't know so much. They're not necessarily so steady. But they're not looking for something, anything material. Right? So you can have that. But Madhyama means Nishkam. It has to be not for yourself. It has to be that it's that has that higher principle. That's just there. And then, like you say, the Uttama becomes very nicely balanced.
Now, what are the different steps to accept clearly the principle of authority?
The steps means that we see is that if you look at the philosophy, you have this, it means nothing works unless there's direction. Right? It means you want to get something done, there has to be direction. Now, do we create our own direction, or do we, you know, rely on how you say, higher, you know, experience? You know, we have to apply it, of course, to ourselves. That's what Manu says. But we see that three out of four things that you have to check is all about authority. Then the fourth one is that being in place, then ourselves is we see that we're able to fit in and it matches for us in our situation. Right? So therefore we see is that no matter what goes, if you approach an authority, it always works better than if you try to figure it out yourself. Right? You know, it's just like the modern academy. 1,000 years it's been developing, so therefore they have some solid basis. Now, if each individual had to start the academy all over again for themselves, how much would they know? You know, so it's based on that building. You know, scientists build on scientists. You know, whatever it is, artists on artists. All these things that goes on. Does that make sense? And then if that gets broken somehow or another, then we see is that the whole thing just culturally and, you know, everything just goes down. The whole pranamoy element just drops. Because without that authority, it doesn't work anyway. Right? So that's one thing. Then if you start at the other end, then Krishna being the supreme and he being the source of everything, then that means all things must be seen in relationship with him because he is actually the source of it. He's the controller of it. And so then the laws given by him are the authority for why things work. That's why Shastra is the main authority. Like we see Shruti Smriti is there. And then the Acharyas, how they understand that. But it's how they understand the Shruti, not some their own idea. That's why these schools are rejected, is because it's not about the Shastra. It's about their own authority, you know, despite Shruti and Smriti. So like that, so it gets off there. So from either end, then you just see it's what practically works. Because everything means science is there because there's laws. And so in everything there's a science. Even in an art, there's a science. That's because there's laws. So how is it there's consistent laws? That's become it comes from that original lawmaker. So without accepting authority, then how are we going to go? Or Prabhupada gives the example of how do you know your father? So your mother. Like that. Sounds good.
As you say, we have to use body, mind, intelligence.
Yes.
But when I hear from senior devotees, but in the preaching, when it goes, instead of following the instructions, try to imitate those instructions in preaching everything. So how to get rid of, because...
How do you get rid of imitation rather than follow? Means that you've seen instructions or example in preaching, but what's the essential point that's there? So you have to contemplate and say, what it means there's a technique that's being used, but what's actually the working principle in the technique? What are the qualities required? What's the actual purpose that they're trying to gain? And so then seeing that, then you try to apply that those techniques that they use, because that was what works for them, and they have to give you something to start with. But if you understand the principle, then if those techniques work for you, great. If by adjusting those techniques it works, great. By using some other techniques it works, then that's whatever you have to do. But the principle is what you have to understand. So they're going to explain the principle through the detail. But if we only catch the detail and not the principle, we'll miss. So that's why we want to ask based on the principle. You know? Does that make sense? If we get too much into the detail, it always changes. Does that make sense? Because every person is different. They may fit into broad categories, you know, of mentalities, but still, them as an individual is different. Is that...
When you say about Guru Sadhu Shastra, so then there are some devotees who say that it is not necessary.
Guru Sadhu Shastra is not necessary.
No. Amongst Guru Sadhu Shastra, it is not necessary to have a guru, but you know, one can accept the Shastras as the ultimate authority. And
without a guru.
Because we anyway associate with the books, so we try to follow the Acharya's instructions anyway.
Right.
So it is not necessary.
But they don't need a guru.
It's not necessary to have a person as a guru.
Oh, okay, so that means they don't need to have a particular Siksha or Diksha guru, but they're accepting the previous Acharyas.
Previous Acharyas and the Shastras. So
okay, and then what do they say that will gain for them? By following that path, by... I accept Prabhupada's books and the Acharya's books, and I'll read those, but I don't specifically need a guru or a guide who's present. So what do they say is the ultimate goal they'll get from that process?
They have complete faith that they will go back to Godhead. But they say that we don't
want... And
we don't
even know if they get back to Godhead, what will they do?
Serve
Krishna. So they'll be the only one there serving Krishna. And then that won't be weird? Because they're the only one serving Krishna.
All devotees are there, so they have to obviously assist some devotees. But
no, but then assisting devotees is that process. Because it's like this. I have some work to be done. And it's very, very important. Why is it important? Because it's to please Krishna. So that means I have to have somebody who's very focused, very dedicated, and very loyal to get it done. Otherwise, I'll do it myself. But you trust them that they can do this nicely to please Krishna. And someone who can't commit themselves to a person, what is their position on fitting any of that criteria? So why would anyone in the spiritual world take this person seriously? And they're saying, I'm going to have a relationship with Krishna, but and Krishna says, he who's a devotee, he says he's my devotee, is not a devotee. He who says he's the devotee of my devotee, they're a devotee. So then, how is this supported by you know, scripture or tradition?
Because they say that they're directly associating with the books, so the Acharya...
They're directly associating with the books, they're doing one thing, but what about the rest of it? The point is, they're directly associating with the books. But the point is that those books, they're taking that as the instructions of Krishna. But the point is that's, again, they're a devotee of Krishna. What about being a devotee of Krishna's devotee? So in that place, they have no standing. So why would anyone in the spiritual world take them seriously? So how would they get back to Godhead? So in other words, they don't accept authority. Will that get you back to Godhead? No. So then why would they think this?
But the books say that we have to accept the guru.
Yeah, the books say you have to accept the guru. So that's a very good point. So the books say you have to accept, and they don't accept that part, means they're not accepting the authority.
Yeah, because when Krishna accepts the guru.
Yeah, Krishna accepts. So therefore, it's just their own. All it is that they can't find or they don't trust any authority. Because it's one thing is that they haven't found, but they have faith in. But it's another thing is that they don't think that there's a need for. So such individuals, there's better they don't talk so much. Like that. People like that shouldn't be allowed. You shouldn't have them be influential on the devotees' lives. They may do some very nice service and things like that that are just directly manipulating the material energy. But if they're going to have anything, they shouldn't be mentors. They shouldn't be in a way that they have influence on the individual's lives. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise you say, well, they give a nice class. It says, so does Vijayananda Saraswati in Harishikesh. The guy is a fabulous speaker. Shivananda, all these guys, I can't even remember their names now because they're all dead. Dayananda, these guys were so good. I mean, as far as orators go, they were fabulous. I mean, as far as we're throwing in orators, Hitler was a fabulous orator. I mean, really good. I mean, Germans are no nonsense people, right? They're not going to just listen to anything. So this guy is speaking and has all whatever it is, 33 million Germans enthralled. And willing to, just totally surrender and do everything. So if just being a good speaker is there, then why are we looking at these guys? We should be going out and hiring professional speakers to come in and give that Bhagavatam, speech and get everyone fired up and all that. They can do the bullet points and do the whole thing, right? You understand? So the whole point is such kind of comments we absolutely don't need. And such kind of comments should actually be stop. These kind of things, is next time you give a class in that environment, speak about this. How bogus it is.
I think in Vishnu Puran it's mentioned that the Shruti Phala, the Phala of visiting the deity every day and offering flowers and fruits is, if you do it for whole life, then in next life you may get a bona fide guru.
Yeah, so that means all it is they didn't do proper. They didn't offer enough flowers and basins of the deities last life, so this life they don't have a guru. Yeah, so we have to understand is that is so rare and it's so special. So if they're not interested, then that's a fault. That's a major fault. So it means they may get to the heavenly planets, but I would doubt that they'd be born in the family of devotees, because there you have to be a practicing solid devotee. And how would they go back to Godhead? Even if they did go back to Godhead, then until they accepted a guru, they wouldn't advance. Because otherwise, you can say is no, but you go back to Godhead. We have to remember that the husbands of the yogic Brahmins, they're back to Godhead. But how is that working out for them? You know what I'm saying? So the point is to develop love for God, not to just go to the spiritual realm.
Actually, in the city of, in the town of Kanchipuram, there's a temple of Vishnu, we have Vishnu Kanchi temple. So Varadaraj is a deity, and Kanchipurna was the priest, and the entire town was aware that Kanchipurna speaks with Varadaraj. So then, and all the public, they come and they ask him that, we have this particular question, can you please ask the Lord, So then what he asked the question on behalf of the people, and then the Lord is to answer. So then one day, Kanchipurna himself has a question that, I want to ask the Lord, can I go back to Godhead or not? So then he was a bit hesitant, but then the Lord says, do you have a doubt? He says, yes, I have a question, that will I go back to Godhead? And Varadaraj says, you will not go back to Godhead. He says, why, my Lord? Just because you're directly serving me, you're not serving any of my devotees. So then his only one seva was, fanning the Lord, because it's very hot in Kanchipuram. So he keeps the fan and then he takes shelter of Mahapurna, and then he serves for 6 months over there. Then Mahaprabhu then says that you go and serve now Varadraj. So then now Varadraj is happy, and then he says, yeah, we'll come back tomorrow.
Oh,
so
okay. Yes. So there's no question of that, because otherwise, what's your relationship with the Lord? Mm-hmm. How do you establish a relationship if you're not connected with somebody who's connected? So it's not a proper thing. And generally, people who do this, it's either they don't have faith in authority, or they're really intellectual and think themselves really, really, really smart. Mm-hmm. But if they're practical people or that, they'll never take that position. Okay. So we're good? Okay. This doubt is answered in the next sutra, right? How to deal with this point. Abhimani vyaparesas tu visheshananu gati bhyam. Abhimani, the presiding deities of the elements, etc., Vyaparesha, pointing out of, denotation.
These are two meanings, commas there.
Pointing out of, or just pointing out?
Pointing out of, comma, denotation of.
Oh, denotation of, okay. Mm-hmm. Two, but, visesha, on account of distinction, being so qualified. Anu gati bhyam, on account of their entering. The Vedas are not unauthoritative, since words referring to inanimate objects that act as if conscious refer to their presiding deities, because there is a prescription of the demigods entering the elements. The words here refer to the presiding deities of the elements and not the elements themselves. So it's not the fire itself and this and that. You know, so it's referring to the deities. And then the deities, they're in that position because of the Lord's potency. So it just goes back, right? Sutta Prakashika. Here the opponents are determined to demonstrate the unauthoritativeness of the Vedas. They say it is not possible for the pranas to fight with each other, proving one's superiority over others, or even fire or water elements to become multiple, since they are mere unconscious elements. But the Sutrakar, in return, quotes the Shastra describing that the physical elements actually refer to the demigods in charge of them. Hence, that which only appears to be unrealistic by the average intelligence is nonetheless accepted, since the foundation is the Vedas. This is the opinion of great sages. Sri Govindabhasya. Siddhanta. The word too indicates refuting this doubt. The terms fire and water refer to the presiding deities of those elements, abhimani vyapadeshaha, not to the unconscious elements. Why? Because of fire, water, and food are qualified, visesha, by the word devata. Hantaham imams tishro devata. I have entered these three deities, fire, water, etc. Chandogya Upanishad 6.3.2. The prana, so we see here, the Lord has entered. Right? So that makes sense. That's where they were. And then they enter the elements. So you can say it from the position of, you know, fire is saying, that means the demigod, but that means ultimate. So if it matches for the pastime in that, the demigod's there. But if it's talking on the absolute truth, it means the Supreme Lord. You have to see the context. Right? Because just like fire, you know, water, air, these are actually names of Krishna. But he gives these names for use by others for the secondary aspects. Right? So, as long as you see that in connection with the Lord, it works very nice. But if you don't, then that's where the material problem starts. Does that make sense? The pranas, senses, are also described as devatas. All the devatas of the senses quarreled, saying, I am the best. These devatas, knowing prana to be the best, left the world. Kaushi Taki Upanishad 4.214. It is also said that the presiding deities entered into the voice and other organs. Agnir Vag Bhutva Mukha Pravishad Adityas Chakshur Bhutva Kshini Pravishata. Fire becoming voice entered the mouth, and the sun becoming the eye entered the two eyeballs. Aitreya Aranika 2.4.24. As well, Smriti says, because fire is what makes the the voice. Right? So someone has a good singing voice because of the placement of fire, that it comes in that place. And so it's an interesting thing. So astrology was telling me, as a general rule, those who are you know, inclined towards business or economics, they generally have this quality, that fires in that voice. So that's why you see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes so many of those, like, you know, how you say, the Goshas and this and that, who are Vaishas, that, you know, then they're the singers. Because just by nature, they generally have a good voice. Okay. Plus, it also helps in business. You speak nice. Yeah. Yes.
One very famous quipanier, he shared that sometimes when he chants and it's really intense, he feels like fire comes out from his mouth. It's the Maha Mantra.
Wow. Okay.
Like he's, you know, breathing fire.
Yeah, because it's fire is what makes the voice work.
So.
Huh?
Also go into that category. Dragons?
It just basically depends upon whether you're a Targaryen or not. Like that's how you judge. Right? Yeah? No? Okay.
Maharaj, about authority, sometimes it's common we find in some groups, like companies, the formal authority. And some people call informal authority. That is that person that has sometimes more influence than the formal authority. We can call this also authority, or it's,
yeah, no,
just
it's authority.
Influence.
It's all authority.
It's all authority.
It's all authority. It's just a matter of, like we said, whether the thunderbolt's being used or the rose, or whether we're using opulence or sweetness like this. It just depends, because a proper authority can use both of them where they need to be used.
Okay.
So you try, you know, you try to be as pleasant as possible, but if people aren't dealing properly, then you have to establish the authoritative element. You know, it has to become more formal. So you can only be informal with those who will accept and follow authority even in an informal environment. Otherwise, if they don't, you have to behave formally. Otherwise, they won't recognize.
Maybe you didn't understand. I'm talking about two persons different. One is the formal authority, like the president, and the other is informal authority because it's very influential. So
yeah, but how is he influencing? What is he influencing with?
Like sometimes you have some, for example.
No, but I'm saying somebody's accepting their influence. That means they see them as an authority.
Yeah, who accept them see the authority, but then...
Yes, just like this, just like, okay, whatever it is, they get up on the stage and sing their new song, and whatever they're wearing, then you see everybody else starts wearing it.
Mm.
Right? So, because they're accepted as an authority.
Yes.
So you can have them on a talk show, have magazines, will have interviews, whatever they say, people will adjust their lives with that. Their authority. So the point is you accept that principle. But it's whatever you want. So the Veda is you accept what is said is authority. And what is the basis of authority. So means one has the position, one has the influence, but unless one's using that ultimately in line with the Veda to please Krishna, then there's a problem. So in other words, you're using the authoritative position in an inappropriate way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I was thinking sometimes the person that is following more the Vedic instructions is not the person that is in a position. So sometimes it makes conflict in some group because people will start follow that informal authority, but it's not good because the scripture says you have to follow the authority. So,
but they're also authority, but it's just a matter of that's between the authorities to work out.
I was thinking in our tradition, we have Diksha and Shiksha gurus.
Yes, yes.
So Diksha is formal.
Formal, and Shiksha is informal.
Shiksha is informal, so it reconciles.
Yeah. Because always the formal is the main point. You see what is applied, given from the informal in line with the formal. That's how you would apply it.
They cannot go against each other.
No. No, people may try to do that, but that's, you know, political people try to make anything against each other. So, but the point is that they're not. They're following the same thing. And so that's why then there's that natural taste on who you're associating with. And at the same time, as there still is that authority in that you have to see what is being understood in line with the principle that's given by the authority. You know, the central authority. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Sometimes people think that the authorities contradict each other, but they actually stress just different points.
Yeah, that's all. It means there is no such thing as contradiction. If you're in line with the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, where's the contradiction? Just you're bringing out a different point. Like someone gets more into, you know, your focus on your chanting. Someone else is talking about, you know, humility and devotional service, seeing yourself as a servant. Someone else is, you know, taking responsibility, being focused. You know, all these are all bona fide aspects of devotional service. So it's just a matter of where they focus. Okay. It is also said that Agnir Vag Bhutva. Oh no, we already said that. No, this one. Prithvyad Yabhimaniyo Devatav Prati Tau Jasa Achintya Shaktayas Tasam Drishyante Munibhischa Taha. The sages see the presiding deities of earth and other elements who display great power, and they also see the devatas' inconceivable energies. Right? Because the inconceivable energies, those are coming from the Lord. So you see that they have entered all these things. So it's that the elements themselves are being governed by the devatas, but they also see the powers, inconceivable energies of the devatas. So that means that's coming from an inconceivable source. Because Indra is quite conceivable. You know, Varuna, Agni, they're quite conceivable, what they do specifically in this and that. But the potency, inconceivable potency, is how this one demigod can pervade all fire, or all water, or all air, or like this. That's the inconceivable potencies of the Lord.
Only
a Krishna conscious person can really see that. Mm-hmm. Like that. You might be able to see it if someone's properly situated. Means if you're properly situated in proper knowledge of any of the three features of the Lord, you can see this to some degree. Mm-hmm. But if you only see it on the Brahman platform, why is that going on? Mm-hmm. Why is that there? Because it's being governed by the Lord, the Supersoul. But why would Super Soul do this unless he is Bhagavan wants it to happen? So it's only when you, like you're saying, Vaishnavas do actually have a full understanding. Others can have, you know, a clear understanding, but won't be full. But if they're below that, then they won't really have much of an understanding at all. So the Vedic concept of what is real knowledge and real intelligence, real understanding, is way above just that I have knowledge and skills. Yeah. Like that. Because that animals have. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, we think that we had to go, it's just like this. Let's say, okay, we have Mozart, he's 6 years old, he is the court musician for the, what is it, Queen of Austria, is it, or something? Like that. And so, and then there's this other guy that, you know, studied under the greatest piano master and all that, and by the time then he's 30, then he's a very good musician and all that, and he is, you know, then can play like Mozart can play. Okay? Now, of the two, which would we say is better? Huh? Mozart, yes. So that's the whole fun part is that, but now we're saying this animal, this spider, without going to school, can do all these amazing things. It can produce a substance that's stronger than steel. Right? The guy has to go to school to be able to produce that. But we'll think the guy who went to school is better than the spider?
We should.
Huh? Yeah, you understand? So that's the thing, is we just flip the standards. That's why we say you measure things. So when you flip the standard, then what kind of Maya is it? And why would it flip? Right? It flips due to ignorance, and the standard is Maya. You know, so therefore, and then it's according to what we think. So it can't be according to authority, really. So then it drops it from the mode of goodness. So it drops it down to passion and ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? Even though we're using our intelligence and being very logical and all that, but it's still based on ignorance. So that's why things can't be understood as they are. So that's the point, is we're thinking knowledge and skill is most important because I went to school and I got it, but that knowledge and skill the animals have. And they didn't go to school, so they're actually even better. That's why it says a two-legged animal is worse than a four-legged animal. Right? Because the two-legged thinks he's better and he makes trouble for everyone else. While the other animals, you know, you have the savanna, they're all living there and basically they all get along. You know, now and again they catch each other and eat each other, but they don't come in and just wipe everybody out. You know? Something's in. You know, the lions don't do anything that's going to ruin the savanna. Something's in. So that's the difference. So that's why then the acharyas say the two-legged animal is worse. Because he doesn't follow any laws except his own whims. While the animals, they follow the natural laws of nature. Okay. The passage, gravanaf plavante, the stones float. Footnote 11. This phrase is found as in Shabarda's commentary 115 on Jaimini Mimamsa, Sutra 135. The expression is commonly used to indicate something impossible. In Mahabharata, Vidura says this is in relation to Dhritarashtra taking his advice. It means it's something impossible, right? Jiva Goswami in Sarvam Varani, Sarvasam Varani also gives the same example of something seemingly impossible that must be accepted because it is in the Vedas. So that's the point. It's in the Vedas. It must be true. So now, what is the context that's in? What is the background of it? That's what we have to find out. Not that it doesn't make sense. How can this be there? How will intelligent people accept this? We have to change the books. All that kind of jazz. That means we don't accept the Shastra. You have to adjust to the Shastra. It's just the way it is. Because otherwise, if we go, if we want to make the Shastra accessible to everybody, how much does people accept? Do they accept anything metaphysical? Generally not. Do they accept even the workings of the mind and all those things? No. Do they accept most of the cultural things like that? No. So that means what would be left of the Shastra? You know, other than, you know, how you say? And God, what's it? And God made this yajna and said, "Be thou happy." You know, that's about what's left. Right? You know, you have Manu, and then you get it down to 10 points. You know, don't kill, don't steal your neighbor's donkey. You know, because there's 5 main principles. You know, that don't steal, don't lie, don't cheat, don't all these different things. And so that's all it's defining. Because, and even that, I remember having a conversation, this was in the 70s, with one guy about the 10 commandments, and he says, people can't follow that. We're talking about 10, you know, we're talking about a whole book, 2,000 shlokas, right, you know.
In the original Torah, it was 613. Then they brought it down to 10, and 10 seems to be also too much.
613?
Yeah.
I never knew that. That was what was written on the stone? So that's why it took him so long to come down. Okay, that makes sense. Because I was thinking, he just goes up there and, you know, you have 10 like that.
A long meditation.
Yeah, and then to get them down, drag them down the hill, yeah. 613, wow. Do they know what the 613 is? Or that was?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jews try to follow those.
Okay.
I mean, they're main points, but all of them, it's 613.
Okay, so those 630 fit behind the 10.
Yeah.
It's like our 64 angas.
Oh, okay.
The main one is 9, 5.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's just specific.
Okay. Okay, cool. Cool. Yes. Yeah, because I think the most strict of all the Christian things in diet is don't eat humans, right? I think that's the only law, that what you can't eat. Right? No? Is there something else? I don't know that there's any restrictions. It's just like you say, like I remember reading once, it was talking about some animal, some little animal. And they were talking, because animals, if you see a book on animals, it's always what do they eat? When do they sleep? Day or night, where in a tree, in a burrow, this and that, mating and defending, right? And what else do you need to know, right? It's like, is he the CEO? No, you don't need to know that, right? So then when it's talking about diet, he said he was very, that this animal is very Catholic. Because Catholic, the actual meaning is broad. So that means he eats anything. if he can get his hands on it, he eats it. Like that. So.
That's what they say about Chinese.
Yes.
There's a time you can't eat meat and fish in Easter.
Yeah, no. You may have a little restriction, but then it goes back. But it's not that they're restricting what you can eat, like that. The Jews now, they have more restriction, what you can mix and this and that. But the Christians, they dropped all that, because that was the whole point: drop the old culture, because who wants to follow that? We get the new, which is much easier. It's designed for sense gratification. There is no clothes. There is no etiquette. There is no food. There is no rules on eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Of course, if you stay married to one person, then that's basically that, and don't eat humans, right? So you marry one human and you don't eat them. Like that.
Not in the beginning.
Not in the beginning. Do it slowly. Starting with the subtle body, right? You eat that first.
Catholic means universal.
Yeah, universal. So that's the thing, is it's so broad, it accommodates everything. So that's the point, is that they were referring there. So what I was saying is that it accommodates everything. So any culture, anything that you're doing, it can accommodate, as long as it's in line with those who, profound that they're the leaders of the Catholics. So does that make sense? Like that. So it's just a matter of what goes with that. Does that make sense? So that's the how do we get into that one? Yeah, that's a long way away from
the stones float.
But how do we get into that? We got into the rule. Okay, because he had the rules, and then they're going. So then Manu gives all the things. Then from there it comes down to little less, and then it comes down to less, and it gets even less. Yeah. So that's the whole point. If we don't accept authority, then all this, we would have to remove everything. Who likes the four regular principles? Those karmis. None of them. So we'd have to remove that, all these different things. You're not the body. You can't be, self-centered on yourself. It's about the benefits you'll get, so this mixed devotional service, pure devotional service, so mixed devotional service would be much more. And so when you get down to it, then what do you end up with? Any of the world religions that are there now. In their generic sense, not in their more, strict or orthodox sense.
We can become very good Catholics.
Yeah, I'm saying that's what you can do if you're talking about numbers. But if you're talking about quality, then you have to have standards. So that's the thing. It goes up. So we can't adjust. We have to accept the authority. Okay. So, therefore, what's impossible in the scriptures, we have to accept it and then try to understand it. Not that because we don't see it as correct. I've come from an intellectual background. I don't see it as correct. Therefore, anybody else intellectual will not understand it. And therefore, that will be a major stumbling block in preaching. No. You don't need one. How often do you need to, talk about the stones float? In your preaching all these years, how often have you quoted this passage from the Veda? Right? Not so often, right? So it's not necessary. So when you understand it, then you can talk about it. But until you understand it, then you don't talk about it. But the point is the Veda is correct. And so then how that works, then we have to see what it says.
So one person who has full faith in Vedas and authority, and still he cannot explain, like.
But that's just that's fine. That's just the symptoms of that makes Kanista Madhyamutam. They can't explain really anything at all and all that. That's the neophyte. They don't know much. They can generally explain, but now and again they can't explain, and that's the Madhyama. Uta, they can always explain because they understand the principle.
So even Kanishta has to have full faith in the
Vedas. Yeah, they can still have that full faith. It's just they have the faith, but they just can't explain everything. You know, because they're not that well read, that much realization, but what they know they can explain to you, and because they're convinced, because they have that full faith, you can become convinced and take up the process. That's why a neophyte can make other people into devotees.
He can be a pure devotee.
He can be a pure devotee, just he may not have a lot of scriptural understanding, but he understands the essence of the scriptures. Does that make sense? So Madhyama means he knows more. Does that make sense? Yeah. You had a question?
Did I?
No? Okay. The passage, Gravanath Plavante, the stones float, praises the demigods who were able in a certain way to enter even the stones. This happened when Lord Rama began to build the bridge of stones. In this way, nothing in the Vedas is incorrect. And the Vedic statement that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the sole creator of the material universes is clearly proved. Because how is it this individual can enter unless it's by the Lord's potency? So, when they say the demigod entered, it means the demigod entered. But the point is how does the demigod able to perform that entrance by the Lord's potency? So it shows, you know, from all levels how it works and it's correct. Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.2.21. The demigod said, the three worlds were created by the five elements, namely ether, air, fire, water, and ether, which are controlled by various demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma. Being very much afraid that the time factor will end our existence, we offer presentations unto time by performing our work as time dictates. The time factor himself, however, is afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, let us now worship that Supreme Lord, who alone can give us full protection. Right? So the demigods, they're able to perform all their duties very nicely, and they're doing that because they're afraid of time. Time is afraid of the Lord, and so therefore, by surrendering to the Lord, then one, everything works very nicely. So we see the demigods when something reminds them of the Lord, then you see they're very Krishna conscious. But they can easily get distracted. That's the position of a neophyte. Things materially go really well, they tend to get distracted. When things don't go as well, they remember the Lord, or something in connection with the Lord, a pastime, then they remind. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it works very nicely. Sutra 2.1.6. So in other words, the point is that things that seem impossible in the Vedas aren't impossible. You just have to understand the context that they're being presented from. Like that. Because you have all these levels. You have the spiritual, you have the transcendental, you have the spiritual, you have the metaphysical, you have the subtle, and then you have the gross. So you have to, if you understand the transcendental, you can understand all these others. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sutra 2.1.6. Introduction to the Sutra by Srila Baladeva Vibhushan. To attack the proposition that Brahman is the material cause of the world. Again, the followers of Shankya take shelter of argumentation, logic. In matters related to Atma, argumentation must be given up, for it is said, Shruti Virodhata. Oh. Na kutar kapash shadhasyatma. Labdaha. A low person who resorts to bad logic cannot attain Atma since it is opposed to the Shruti. Shankya Smriti. 635. However, he uses logic to find fault in his opponent. But he uses it to find fault, but he cannot, his logic won't actually develop anything of proper because it's against the Veda. But it doesn't mean he won't use his logic to defeat his enemy. That's why Krishna in the Gita says, of all the logic principles that are there, that Gotama gives, Siddhanta is the one that represents the Lord. Because then, using all the other elements of logic to come to the point of siddhanta, whatever you use and whatever techniques need to be done, then that's a proper use of logic. But if we simply use logic to defeat the someone else's argument, and that's all, then that doesn't represent the Lord. That's just Maya. So, that's it. Yes.
In this connection, the low person means atheist? Or?
Yeah, generally, because that's what we're discussing about, are those who don't accept the Veda, those who don't accept the Lord. Yeah, but it can be that they're, you know, like in this case, they're agnostic, so they don't really know, but that's not actually, that, you know, agnostic's better than an atheist, but it's not up to the standard of a theist. Because you can say it's, in one sense, it's quasi-theism in that, or, I mean, if they talk about the Lord, or it's just it's a quasi-theism in that the concept of being a supreme helps the whole philosophy and everything work nicely. Mm-hmm. And then people, it creates some authority and everything like that, but only in as much as it follows their own philosophy. Where it contradicts their own philosophy, then at that point, then God's not so important. You know, so they'll tend not to blaspheme the Lord, they'll just leave him out. Does that make sense?
This particular statement belongs to their own scripture. They don't
belongs to?
Their scripture, sorry.
Yeah, but it doesn't
but
mean
they don't
that.
Follow that.
Hmm?
They don't follow that because they themselves use bad logic too.
Yeah, but the point is that so that does Shankaracharya say Bhajagovindam?
Yeah.
Do they follow it? Mm-hmm. No, so that happens. So that's why our acharyas, if there's something that they quote from these scriptures, then that's of use to use. But just because they quote different things doesn't mean that we actually are oppressed. Right? Mm-hmm. That's why we have to stick to what the acharyas say. Okay. However, he uses logic to find fault in his opponent. Shamshaya, does the world arise from Brahman as the matter, material cause, or not? Purvapaksha, how can Brahman be the material cause since the world is completely different in nature from Brahman? Brahman is said to be omniscient, all-controlling, pure, and joyful. The universe is directly seen to be full of ignorance, lack of control, contamination, and suffering. The difference cannot be disputed. It is seen that the effect has the very nature of the material cause. Pot and clay, crown and gold, cloth and thread. Since it is impossible for the world to be the effect of Brahman because of such difference, one must search out a different material cause having similar qualities to the world. Right? So they're starting it from here, but they're not understanding what is the common point.
Yes.
Right? Like that. Because, what do you call it? The gold and the crown, still the gold in its original place is different from the crown. And clay, where it's found and how it is different there. So they're trying to they're trying to create these. They're using similarities in the wrong area. Right? The material cause is pradhan alone, since it has qualities tamas, rajas, sattva, similar to the world, which is full of bewilderment, sorrow, and joy. Right. So, but the point is pradhan full of bewilderment, sorrow, or joy. Right, so they're complaining about these qualities, but the same thing in qualities, pradhan doesn't have those either. Mm-hmm. Right, it's just an undefinable mass of, like that. So even that, so it separates. How does it separate? Where's the potency for that? Because we're saying pradhan, this is its nature. Where does the potency for it to come to do these other things? So it's only because potency comes from outside, it separates, and then. By applying the modes of nature. So the elements themselves aren't the problem. It's the consciousness we have in dealing with them. Because otherwise, if they were the problem, then all these different philosophers, they only have the material nature to deal with. And so if the problem is inherent in the nature, their dealing with it is the problem. Right? So, but they can change the consciousness so they're unaffected by the modes and still deal with the material energy. So that means the Pradhan, if we look at it, it has the 24 elements. But where did all these qualities come from? Where did all these potencies come from? That's just not being seen by them. Because they're saying is, omniscient, control, all-controlling, pure, and joyful. But they're not even understanding what they're saying, because they say material world's opposite. But then, full of bewilderment, sorrow, and joy, is that Pradhan has that? No. So therefore, it doesn't. They just cut the one and then say the other, and then people buy it. Because I prove that wrong, then whatever I say must be right. It's just like, saying, two plus two is 47. That's bogus. Whoever heard of that? That's nonsense and all that. Don't we agree? Yeah, we all know it's not that. It's five, what a bunch of idiots. You understand? So that's what they're doing here. They're using, trying to throw out the Vedas in authority and then presenting themselves as an authority, though they're also wrong. But because you've already done the one, you tend to, accept. You don't. Nobody looks that far, generally. That's their weakness. Right? Uttara. But there is, in that pure omniscient Brahman as the material cause, two very subtle shaktis, consisting of consciousness and matter, to make it similar to the effect, the material world. Purva Paksha. Okay, so that's the whole point, is that their shaktis are there. So that's the thing, Brahman has shaktis. Point is because they're generic, that's why it's called impersonal. Doesn't mean they're not there. Because this Mayavadi idea that impersonal means there's nothing there. Because actually that's Buddhism, it's not a Vedic concept. Right, so that's why there's a big difference between Brahmavadis and Mayavadis. So Mayavadis will classify themselves as Brahmavadis, and much of the time when we're talking impersonalists, then we can use the same arguments. But generally speaking, when it's an atheistic approach, and there's no connection that this is all illusion, that's Mayavadis. Mayavadi means it's all Maya. Like that. Brahmavadis means it's all Brahman. So, technically speaking, they'll say it's all Brahman, but they'll say this illusion's not Brahman, so technically they're not Brahmavadis, they're Mayavadis. Mm-hmm. Brahmavadis accept the material world as Brahman. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah.
What is the meaning of exactly of Uttara and Purvapaksha?
Uttara means that is, means, okay, go.
That's our answer.
Yeah. So, when it says Vishaya, that means that's a point we're making. So that's the Pratigya. Yeah. And generally in the Vishaya there, it means if it's one sentence Vishaya, then it's only the Pratigya. Right? If it's, you see it's like a paragraph, then it's the Pratigya. It means, in other words, it's the statement and the reasons. Yes. Like that. Then, their doubt will come up. Yes. Because if you say the point, it's not that doesn't necessarily bring the doubt. It's when you try to explain it that's the doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does that make sense? Like that. So then Shamshaya means their doubt. That's their pratigya.
Yes.
And Purvapaksha, that is their reasoning and their udaharana, means their explanation. Their examples and everything. Their argument. Like that. And they may take it as far as they come to the conclusion, whatever it is, it's just, that's there. So to make it simple here means, Vishaya means our point, Shamshaya means their point, and Purvapaksha means their explanation.
Okay.
So Uttara means our explanation.
Yes.
Means Uttara means it's, they've made their Purvapaksha, right? They made their argument, and then we have our counter argument. So that's the Uttara.
Okay.
So right, we've made our presentation. They have a counter argument.
Yes.
That's the Purvapaksha. Ours Uttara means our counter to that.
Yes.
Like that. And so sometimes you see, like here, they just keep going back and forth for a while.
Yes.
But when it comes to Siddhanta, that means it's going to wrap it all up.
Okay.
That's ours.
Yes.
Like that. So the Vishaya, the Uttara, and the Siddhanta is ours.
Yes.
And the Shamshaya Purvapaksha is theirs.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it just makes it, in other words, people who know logic, then they just catch this because you don't have to explain all the things because you know it's there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like a Bengali recipe. Mm-hmm. All it says is, okay, you know, make a chance of this, fry the eggplant, and then, you know, and then add, neem leaves, like that, and that's it. That's all it says. So, but what does it mean? You already know cooking. Mm-hmm. So someone can say, this is not a recipe, this is bogus. It's a recipe for people who knows how to cook. But if you don't know how to cook, then you have to say this, and cook it this much time for this long, and put this in and that, and how much, and everything. And you know what I'm saying? It identifies. Means if you know what eggplant cooked looks like, so you don't have to say cook it until golden, and like that. That's for a recipe, you have to say that. Otherwise, they cook it until it's mushy or until it's black. Right? But not golden. Okay. So that makes sense. So that's the thing is, here we don't have to explain the whole five aspects of the logic and then all the other techniques that are used, because one already understands that. So here it just gives the main points. The others are already included. It means you know them, you can find them. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prabhu.
Even in here, you can make it more direct, like that. You just put, you know, it's an introduction to Sutra by Baladeva Vidurusha. You don't have to put it in brackets. Just put it there, then put that, and then just drop that down below.
I didn't understand.
Means you don't have to put this in brackets.
You just directly
put introduction, and then put this, and then put this down below it.
Yeah,
instead of right in line. You just, wow. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Okay. That means simply the word introduction must be there in the brackets. Just as I'm following this, like Samshaya and Puropaksha in the brackets. And
no, you can just say, because you're just making the point, introduction to the sutra by Balarada Dipusha. Yeah. You know, like we do in the Bhagavad.
Actually, Maharaj, I asked you that time, you know, a few months back about this, that this is what is happening. So then you said that you mentioned it by Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan. Otherwise, we will not know who is it, you know.
Yes, that's why I'm saying you do that, but I'm saying you don't need to put the bracket, like in the Bhagavatam. Sure, this is not going to sell me comments, and then we have to think.
Okay, I got it.
Like that, BBT Purport mentions.
Right? Yeah,
you don't have to put it like this, but you can put it, or if you want to bring it out, you just put it like that, so you understand it's just an introduction.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. We're just trying to bring a consistency between the two.
Actually, this is not a very common affair. It is sometimes set up, but I'll take care of it.
The point is, it's just like this. If this is coming from somebody, then you mention that.
This is Banu Maharaj.
Yeah, but he's mentioned that, so then otherwise, then you can say Banu Maharaj mentions or something.
Because maximum footnotes, we have it from Banu Maharaj's.
So if it is, it's just him, then put something like that. So Banu Maharaj.
There are a few things, you know, there are a few footnotes wherein I do not have any references because I'm taking from different sources. So I'm not getting an exact address to, you know, for that. So then what to do?
You try to find it, because they have books that show where all the verses are.
Because for one, the reference of Jaiva Dharma, I tried a lot, you know, so much time it went into it, but I never got any reference to it.
But if you know it's from Jaiva Dharma, just mention Jaiva Dharma.
Okay.
because then you know it's there, at least. At least you know it's inside the Dharma. If you don't know the exact chapter of the stab, at least you know it's inside the Dharma.
Yeah, because the search was not getting successful in Jaiva, that in the PDF, and it was giving some problems.
No, but if you know it's there, yeah, just mention
sure, sure,
the Dharma.
Yes, I'll try to make
like
it
that. And if this is Banamarsh, then you just put something here, you know, put Banamarsh like that. This phrase is known as like that.
Because the, okay, let me just. Sutra Govindvashya Siddhanta. So all these paragraphs of Manu Maharaj only.
And these aren't part of the. So what is Govindvashya and what's not?
Yeah, this is Govindvashya, where you put the Siddhanta. So this explanation has been given by Manu.
Meaning?
I'm referring to these files. There are a few commentaries where I'm referring to other files, you know. So I'm taking
So this is coming from Baladev Vidyabhushan or not?
This is Baladev Vidyabhushan's translation.
Yeah.
Banu Maharaj has done.
Yes, but we don't have to mention that.
Yeah, I'm not mentioning that at all.
So, but why are you bringing that
because
up?
Because you mentioned about this particular footnote.
So is this in Sanskrit, then that he's translated that from somewhere else?
Yeah, this is what he has translated.
From what? Who?
How do I know, Maharaj? What if one of the words didn't know? Just
So then in this case, you put there, but if this is in the thing, you know he's just translated there. This is a footnote.
And even the original copy that I have, it also has a footnote like this. So then it doesn't mention...
The point is this is Banu Maharaj. He's giving that. But this is Baladev Vidyabhushan. It's translated. Why are you trying to connect the two?
Okay, fine.
Why can't you make a difference between he's put a footnote and he's just translated the book? You know, it's just like Bhagavad Gita, so we do have to put, you know, Prabhupada's translation of you know, the, you know, 2.11 of the Bhagavad Gita. No, we know that that's there. He's translated this, but this is what Baladev said. Now, the footnote, that's what Banu Maharaj has brought here, so we just mentioned somehow another Banu Maharaj.
Yeah. Actually, I shouldn't mix. I want it.
So the whole idea is that we know where they're coming from.
Definitely. I'll put as much as possible.
Yeah, okay.